Good morning. Oh, gosh. Looked up in the hymnal to find our pericopes for today. Knew which one I was given, and looked for the 24th Sunday after Trinity, and it didn't fit. Dawned on me after a while, no, we're starting to count backwards with this coming week, and it's the third Sunday before the end. And I don't know what name that has. It's just minus three or something, and counting. Yeah. The end is near? The end is near, right. The other thing that struck me, and I don't know if you had a chance to look at the three readings together, is that my sense is it's not a real easy package. Last week we had the advantage of, for instance, the gospel reading using the Old Testament lesson, and that makes for a nice bond where you can talk fulfillment and you can talk old, new, you know, a lot of different things. This week it just it seems very disjointed. That's all I'll say. I'm not in charge of putting it together. We certainly have a very different kind of Old Testament in terms of literature in front of us than we had last week. Last week, in terms of the Hebrew, was very prosaic. It was very simple grammatically. It was prose, straightforward, a lot of familiar words, a lot of heavy-duty words, especially holy, and we used that a lot to pick the central themes. This week we're in the book of Job. I remember a comment by William Albright, Old Testament scholar of note, who said, likely with a little bit of hyperbole, anyone who thinks he can understand more than one half of the book of Job is kidding himself. And he wasn't even talking theology. He was just talking the text. Different kind of text. Now, this one isn't quite so bad. And what's also good is that you look down to the footnotes and it's not all that convoluted. It's not contested. The reading is fairly straightforward. And let's go at it. Chapter 14, verses 1 to 6. In terms of the context, this comes toward the end of the first cycle of speeches in the book of Job. You recall that it's Job against the three friends for the bulk of the book, and there are three cycles. This is toward the end of the first. In fact, with chapter 15, then Eliphaz, who begins the whole thing back in chapter 4, he starts again, and it kind of wobbles its way on through the book. There's been a good bit of debate before this, and in fact, the debate has gotten to the point that Job kind of vacillates when he talks between directing his comments and criticisms and unhappiness to the friends, and also then to God. And sometimes it's not even clear whether the focus is horizontal or vertical. And maybe you get the feeling it's artificial to divide. All right. Verse 1, chapter 14. Adam, or man, not in the gender sense, but in the humanity sense. Adam, born, this is a passive participle, call. Born of woman. I think the use of the word Adam here is not by accident. He is meaning to describe all people, for one thing. I think the overtone of the Adam sense is still there. Anyone who is the son of Adam, who is the product of, who is an Adamic person, is included here. Clearly the counterpart to woman, Isha, would be Ish, you know, but then that's a gender term. We're not talking gender. We're talking all those who are of the root, the stock of Adam. Man, born of a woman, Katsar Yamim. Short, this is an adjective, brief, of days. U Shavath Rogez, and full of Ragaz is a root that means it's used sometimes to describe the mountains when Yahweh touches the earth, especially in judgment, and the mountains quake and they quiver and they tremble back and forth. That's the word that's here. The life of one who is born of woman is one whose days are short, but full of, you pick the verb, the noun, agitation, turmoil, trembling, trouble, difficulty. And it's talking about what is in the heart as well as, you know, the outer aspects of life. There's a, seems to me, a contrast between the two adjectives that are here. Short, full. Often when the blessing of God is talked about, it is the among ways that the blessing is talked about is that a person blessed by God is one who is full of days. Whose days are just, they just keep going and going. The fullness of God's blessing. Here, that's short. The days are short. It's just that the few days you have are full of uncertainty, full of insecurity, full of anxiety or fear. There's Job talking here, and he's setting the pace for everything that follows down below. Verse 2. Like a flower, yatza, he comes out. It's really perfect, but I think the sense here clearly is the present tense conveys it better. He's not talking about something in the past, but kind of an ongoing, regular thing. Like a flower, he emerges on the scene. You know, he appears, he's there. And he withers. Coming, going, just put right next to each other in a baldly clear kind of way. Like a flower, he comes, he appears, and he withers, kind of like the picture that you have in Isaiah 40, that like the man is like grass, like a flower, that one day is here, the next day is gone. It's just that in Isaiah's case, what he's saying is that Word of God is not like that. Word of God is for real. And it's forever. And that is the hope that he directs his people toward, the Word. Job doesn't have that focus on the Word here. It's just that flower. Here, gone. And that's the image that he has of man. Not positive stuff. And he flees. Barach is a verb that's kind of used here almost in a poetic sense, except maybe the English word fleet, if you add a T to the normal flee, gives the flavor of what this word is meant to convey here. He flees, he fleets along like a shadow. He is as inconsequential in this earth as a shadow. And the sun is out, and you stand there, and you got a shadow, and the sun goes down, and the shadow disappears like it was never there, and there's nothing left behind. There is nothing consequential to this person, to this entity. He flees like a shadow, and he does not stand. That is to say, there's nothing left behind. There's no staying power. And that's the word that some of the English translations use. He doesn't stay. He doesn't linger. There's nothing enduring about him. Now, verse 3 then directs that, makes a conclusion on the basis of that. Given the fact that the human condition is this. He's not talking sinners here. He's not talking, you know, good guys, bad guys. Anyone who comes from Adam. Given the fact that that's the case. Af, will you really? There's a contrast here. Will you really, upon this one, open your eyes? Now, it doesn't mean open like in close your eyes, but open in the sense of fix your eyes. Is this one worth the effort? Is this a worthy object of your fixing your eyes, your view on that person, so that, second half of verse 3, so that, and the first word is the object there, othi. You'll notice that there's a footnote there, and you look down at the footnote, and it says that a lot of the versions there make that into a third person and not a first person. Certainly the third person fits the flow, the context, much better than the first person, because nothing else in, certainly in the pericope that we have, there's nothing else in the first person there. However, Job is kind of like that. We said before that his view jumps between horizontal and vertical without transition sometimes, and this same look to the general situation, but then my situation that just moves back and forth also so abruptly sometimes that this may very well be exactly what was there originally. In any case, the point is, me or him, whichever, you bring into judgment with yourself. Given the fact that man's situation is like this, is this the one you really want to focus on, with the result that you bring this one into judgment? I think the Job is one who likes to twist what in other contexts is used in such glorious, marvelous ways, and he twists it and kind of turns it inside out. Imak, with you, is one of those basic promises that God gives his people all through the Old Testament. I will be with you, right? He says that to prophets. He says that to his people. He says that as he looks into the future, I will be with you. Job takes that with you promise and twists that baby around until it becomes a matter of judgment. To be with God is to stand in God's judgment. All right. The problem with that, verse 4. Who is there who can yittain? This is from Nathan, Kal, imperfect. Who can give, or looking at the context below, who can bring clean out of the polluted, the unclean? Who can make something unclean into the clean? Lo echad, not one. In other words, we stand before God in judgment. He calls us there to judgment. Who is there among us who can stand before God and pretend like he's clean? There is no one who stands before God that way. Verse 5. Im likely here usually means if, likely here means however, it's an emphatic, surely, certainly. Surely, certainly his days, that is the son of Adam, the child of Adam, his days are fixed. Charatz is to determine or to fix or to settle, to decree. His days are decreed. The number of his months is with you. There's another with you. That is not a gospel with you. The number of his days are fixed. Our number of his months are with you. His, you notice the footnote makes that into a plural. The kathiv is a singular. His statute, that is to say, his determined days, you place, his limits, you fix, asa, and he cannot surpass them. He cannot get beyond them. Yahweh, in other words, has set the limits for the life of the sons of Adam. There's a lovely progression in that verse from days to months to basically lifetime. No matter which way you look, God has set them all. Therefore, verse 6, A, imperative from nasa, to lift. Implied object here is your eyes, or lift your view, lift your attention from upon him and let him rest. Assuming we keep the form as we have it there, so that he can rest. You notice the footnote makes that into another imperative. I don't know that it's necessary. Take your eyes off of him, please. And of course, the hymn is by implication Job himself, so that he can rest. Or as he says in chapter 7, so that he can swallow his spittle in peace. Take your eyes off of me. That's almost, again, you remember I said that Job likes to take the good things and twist them so that they become hideous. Then may the Lord lift up, same word, his countenance upon you and give you peace, right? Take your eyes off of me and let me have a moment of peace so that he can enjoy or live out his days like a hired one. Back at the beginning, in chapter 7, that same image is there. Man, under the governance of God, is nothing more than a laborer, a slave, one who has no freedom to live a meaningful life of his own. This is the gospel of... No. Yeah. Yeah. The af is a word that is used in this context here to express some kind of surprise or a contrast. Will you really? Is it really on this kind of person that you want to, you know, fix your eyes? Implication is this kind of weakling is not worthy of the kind of attention that God gives. Oh, that's a different word. That's a different, sorry. Same spelling, different word. Sorry about that. I wasn't hearing what you were asking. How do you preach this? Yeah, come on up, Jeff. That's tough. How do you preach this? It seems to me that there are a couple of things that are important about what's here. Job is clearly articulating what it is to live a life without God as friend. And he stands over against God, and he stands, at least as he feels, under the judgment of God. And there is no one that can bring out of the dirty something clean that can stand in the judgment of God and come out right. No one. There is an elemental honesty about Job that is the description of the life of one without Jesus Christ, and the preparation for understanding exactly what Jesus Christ has to give. And another place I would take this, love to take this, and I've played with Job a lot, is in terms of who is the God whom we worship? And if there is a better description of God as one over whom we have no control, on whom we have no handles, whom we cannot ingratiate to ourselves in any sense, it's got to be Job. For that one to become flesh, that's the Christian message. But for that, we need New Testament.